great pleasure for me to have been invited back here. John is obviously scraping the bottom of the barrel now, doing reruns and things like that. But anyway, it's a great honor to be here once again. Our subject is Nigla v'Nistar b'Yemos HaMashiach. The Parsha B'Chukosai that we read this week in addition to Behar, of course, is dominated by the blessings and the curses. Unfortunately, there are more curses than blessings. That's the bad news. But the good news is that the blessings are very all-embracing, are very glorious and very uplifting. And the Mefarshim observe that the brachos are more general, the klalos are more specific. And it's interesting when you read the list of the klalos and you consider Jewish history, and some of you may not have an interest in Jewish history, we find that to a great extent the curses have been fulfilled, albeit not all at once. If they had come about all at once, perhaps it would have overwhelmed Klal Yisrael. And the Mefarshim say this is also a kind of chesed, that they have been the curses have been fulfilled gradually over time in different places, in different contexts, in different eras. But what about the brachos? Have the brachos ever been fulfilled? So we have here an opening vision of Yemos HaMashiach, as we'll soon see. I'm just reminded of the story of the small shtetl in Poland. They were waiting for Mashiach, and they thought, you know, we're so far off the beaten track here, off the trade routes. Mashiach is going to come to Poland, and we'll never find out about it. Could be months or years before we even learn of the arrival of Mashiach. They thought, you know, we can't allow that to happen, so we're going to station, we're going to build a platform at one end of the town, and we're going to position someone whose job will be to sit in that platform, scour the Polish countryside, and when he sees a long line of heathen heading out of Poland, he'll raise the alarm, he will go and join him. So they hire Beryl, you know, the town Schlamazel, to take up that role, and after a couple of weeks, a friend of his meets him in the street and says, Beryl, how's your new employment? So he says, well, the pay is not great, but it looks like steady work. So we've been waiting for Mashiach for a long time. And if you look at the source number one, for those who have the source material, the parasha begins in B'chukosai Teilecho V'smitzosai Tishmer V'asisim Osam. If we are faithful in our covenant, in the relationship with Hashem, V'nasati Gishmechem B'itam, so you'll have rain in its proper season, V'nasaharetz Yuvulav Eitzat Sadei Yitem Peryo, material, prosperity, and the Sigla can daishes batsia, that the crop will be bountiful, the harvest will be a bumper crop year after year. Vishavtem levetach ba'atzek, and you'll dwell securely in your land. Then we have the very important, very all-embracing expression, Asati shalom ba'aretz, I will grant peace to the land. And Rashi already says that in source number two, that if you say hare machal, hare mishte, I've got food, I've got drink, what else do I need? So the Torah says, well, if you don't have peace, then all of that is to no avail, whether it's peace in the land or a person if it doesn't have peace in his own life. So therefore we have the great bracha l'matzal kadosh baruch hu kli machzik bracha l'hashalom v'nasati shalom ba'aretz. So far so good, and you might even say to a degree that this has been achieved, this has been fulfilled in Jewish history at certain times, not unfortunately in a permanent way, but at least over a period of certain time in our history. U'shechavtem v'ein macharid, you'll lie down, no one will cause you fear, v'hishpati chayara min ha'aretz. And it is those words that I'd like to focus on in the time we have together this morning. V'hishpati chayara min ha'aretz, I will cause wild beasts to withdraw from the land. That's our friends in Art Scroll translated that way. And a sword will not cross your land. The Cherev lo sava b'artzechem. What is the meaning of that expression? V'nishpati chaya ra'a min ha'aretz. This is actually the subject of a fascinating dispute, and that is going to serve as our entree into our analysis of the experience of Yemos HaMashiach, the Nigla and Nistar. If you take a look at it's source number 6, we can go out of order a little bit, in the upper left. This is taken from the comments of Ramban to our parsha, B'Chukosai. And if you look where it's underlined, a little bit beyond the first lines, V'ein betorah brachos shlemos ka'ele He said, you find nowhere else in the Torah these kinds of uplifting, sublime blessings. Shehem divrei habris v'hatanayim asher ben HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'eineinu. These are the words of the covenant and the agreement between God and the Jewish people. V'da, says Ramban, ki lo hisigu Yisrael me'olam v'brachos ha'eilev. B'shlemusan, I'm sorry to say, the Klal Yisrael has never experienced the complete fulfillment of these blessings. Lo harabim v'lo ha'yichidim mehem. Not Klal Yisrael as a whole, and even smaller groups within Klal Yisrael have never yet experienced the full realization of these brachos. Doubtless because we've never really fulfilled in Kukosai Teleichos. And the Ramban has a lengthy, fascinating comment in which he elaborates on this, in which he says that this is a harbinger, or this is a description of what we would call Yemus HaMashiach, the Messianic era. If you look at the very last words, he says, in paragraph 6, Aval Yiskayim Imanu Bizman Hashlemus. These will be fulfilled at the time when we, the Jewish people, are fulfilled. And at that time, then we will actually experience the realization of all of these brachos. But what is it all about? What do the brachos actually entail? So I told you, those words, V'hishpati chaya ra'a min ha'aretz, are the subject of a dispute, which is recorded in Ramban, and we'll soon see that it's reflected in other earlier sources as well. If you look at source number 7, immediately beneath that paragraph, this is taken from the Ramban, a different passage in Ramban, also in our parsha. V'hishpati from the top, V'hishpati chaya ra'a min ha'aretz. Says Ramban, this is the subject of the machlokes tanoim, al das Rabbi Yehuda, she'omer ma'aviran min ha'olam. He says, V'hishpati chaya ra'a min ha'aretz, means that I will ensure that ferocious beasts are banished from your land. They won't menace you in your land. That aggressive, maybe threatening animals will not come into your land. And he says why that is, why logic would help us expect that this would indeed be the case. When there is plenty, when there is ample sustenance, when there is food in the fields which is abundant, and where the economy is buzzing. And therefore, he says, and the cities are filled with people. So the wild animals are not going to come into the habitations, because when the cities are full of people, and even the roads are busy, because there are people passing by, there are travelers, they're going for business, they're going for pleasure, the country is upbuilt. So he says the wild animals, they may be in the land, but they won't menace you, they won't threaten your well-being. They'll be in the forest, they'll be in isolated places, and the people in their own towns will be secure.
And in the future, the line of the land will be together.
We get
nature will change.
Oh, okay, that's the other view, my friend. Don't steal my shear. Valdat Rabbi Shimon. This is Rabbi Yehuda. Kipshuto. Says Ramban. Valdat Rabbi Shimon. Shama Mashbisan Shelo Yoziku. It's a different story. He says that it's not that the animals themselves will be removed, will be absent from your experience or from your towns and villages. The animals will be there, but their nature will be transformed. The aggressive, the ferociousness of the animals will be removed. Yoma v'hishpati raz hachayos min haaretz. So to speak, the aggression of the animals will be removed. V'hu hanachon. And this the Ramban elaborates upon, because this is the preferred approach of Ramban. Ki tihye eretz yisrael be'eskim hamitzvos kasher haya ha'olam mitchilasol. The world will be transformed to the status of Adam Harishon Kodim Hachet, Kodim Chetosh of Adam Harishon. Ve'ein chay v'remes v'emis Adam. At that time, the animals did not threaten Adam. Kemo she'amru, ein arod me'mis el hachet me'mis. The viper, the serpent, does not kill, it's the chet that kills, and that's a reference to a certain Gemara.
In the tape as well, it was like that.
In the Teva as well, I presume it was, because even though there's a medrash about how the lion once mauled Noah, but on the whole, they all survived. Okay? V'zeh shama hakasev v'sha'asha yonek al kor pasa, and etc., etc. We'll get close. We'll look at that again in a moment. And then where it's underlined right in the middle of that paragraph, v'hine b'vriyosu shel olam ne'ma b'chayos shenasan lahem ha'esev l'achla. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give the animals to eat in Gan Eden? So it says they were all vegetarian. They were all herbivores, to use the correct term. They didn't eat one another. Hashem says, I gave them all vegetables to eat, and apparently they were quite satisfied with it, but it didn't last. If you look further down where it's underlined again, he says, but subsequently, when the animals started to, when the world was changed because of the chait, so then the animals became aggressive and they began to eat one another. Ve'yos eretz Yisrael al hashlemus, v'tishpos ras min hagam. When eretz Yisrael reaches its perfection, v'tishpos ras min hagam, then the aggression and the carnivorous nature of the animals will also become subdued. V'yamdu al hateva harishon, they will be restored to their original practice. Asher husam behem be'etz hayitzirasam. And then he concludes at the end, he says, again, this of course has not yet been fulfilled. We've never seen anything like this at all. The source for this, Ramban refers to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, can be found here in source number 4. I'm sorry, we're going to start out of order. It's in the lower right. And this is from the Torah Slanim from the Sifra. Mushchavtem ve'in la'chavid v'lo yireim mikol beria v'yishpati chaya ra'a min ha'aretz. Rabbi Yehuda omer ma'aviram min ha'olam. I'll remove them from the world. There's a certain irony here. At first blush, that may sound like the more midrashic interpretation. Ma'aviram min ha'olam, they'll all disappear. But no, on the contrary, that's Alter Chapshat explains the Ramban, as we've seen. It doesn't mean that there will be no more lions or bears or wolves or foxes in the world. What it means, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is that they won't menace you, they won't come into your world, they won't threaten your well-being or your safety or that of your children. But according to Rabbi Shimon, says the Sifra, Rabbi Shimon omer mashbisan shelo yizoku v'chein omer words on the line v'gar ze'ev in keves v'namer in gidi yirbat v'egel u'kfir umri yachdav v'nar katan noheg bam u'far avadov tireni yachdav. If you look in source number 5 immediately beneath, here you have the passage, the beautiful, well-known passage in Yeshaya. V'gar, the word v'gar is missing, I'm afraid. V'gar ze'ev in keves. This is from the Haftarah, beginning with the words Od Hayom Benov. It's one of the most stirring passages in all of the Tanakh, and it's chosen as the Haftarah, by the way. We read it not that long ago. Does anyone remember? Achon Shel Pesach. It's on Achon Shel Pesach. And they also read it on Yom HaAtzma'ut because in Eretz Yisrael they don't have Achron Shel Pesach. And those good Zionists who arrived, the religious ones, they didn't want to pass up that Haftarah. They were missing it. So they found a day for it. So there are places that read it. Of course, not in this worthy Kehillah nor in my Kehillah, but there are places. Anyway, we read on Achron Shel Pesach, Od Hayom Benov, and here you have the sublime vision of Yeshaya, the lion and the lamb, the gar ze'ev in keves, the namer in gidi yirbats, the egel u'kfirum ri yachdav, the nar katana hegbam, the far of a dove tirena yachdav, yirbatsu yaldehin, the arye kebakayo chal teven, the sha'asha yonek al chor pasen, the amuras sifoni gmul yado hada. Lo yareyo lo yashkisu b'chol har kachi kamakim ala haaretz deyas Hashem kemaim liyam echasim. The wolf shall lie with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the kid, and a calf, a lion whelp, and a fatling will walk together, and a young child will lead them. A cow and bear will graze, and their young will lie down together, and a lion, like cattle, will eat hay. You know the story of the Western tourist in the bad old days of the communist era who visits Moscow, and he's supposed to pay visit to the Moscow Zoo. And there in the Moscow Zoo, he beholds something remarkable. In one enclosure, they have a lion and the lamb. And the lamb is grazing peacefully, and the lion is lazing peacefully, as lions tend to do. And he's astonished to see they seem to be getting along just fine. And he says to the zookeeper, I never imagined I would see with my own eyes the fulfillment of that vision of the prophet Isaiah, the lion and the lamb lying down together. And here in the Russian homeland, I see that it's been fulfilled. He says, how do you do it? The zookeeper says, no problem. Every day, another lamb. So this is the famous vision of Yeshaya, and according to the Sifra, the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon is exactly in the pshat in these verses. Are they to be taken at face value? If so, the Nati Shpati Chaya Rami Na'aretz, that there will be a transformation of Teva itself. And this is the view of Rabbi Shimon, and this is the view which the Ramban endorses. As we saw, he says, Menachon Hu, he prefers the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says, no, it's only meant metaphorically. It's only meant metaphorically. This is also found that a similar machlokes, or a similar aspect of the same machlokes, is found in Parshas Shmini, where you have the Or HaChaim and Rabbeinu Bechaya on the reference to the Chazir. That's HaChazir. The word Chazir is interpreted midrashically to mean from the word Chozer, that as if to say that the Chazir will in the future times will become a kosher species, become a kosher animal, that it will be transformed. Of course you understand that if the vision of Yeshaya is meant literally, as is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, this will be a transformation in the laws of nature. Nowadays, if you give a lion hay and a vegetable to eat, it will die within the days because it can't digest that food. It doesn't, it's not the nourishment that it requires. So if the lion and the lamb will lie down together, it can only be because nature as we know it will be transformed. And this indeed is the view of the Ramban and the Mekubalim generally. Actually, this machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, I believe, is the same machlokas as we find in the Gemara among the Amoraim between Shmuel and the Gemara says Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Gemara in Brachos on Lamed Aleph on the base. You don't have it here, and that is same machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban about Imus HaMashiach generally, because we have the famous statement of Shmuel. Ein ben yemenu l'imos ha-Mashiach el shibud malchios bilvad. That is the view of Shmuel, and the view of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan is on the contrary. It will be a transformed world. It will be a completely different world. As said in Brachos Lamed Daled, it's also machlokes in Sanhedrin. There again, you have the opinion of Shmuel, and you have the Chokim al Shmuel, not specified. Now, many of the Mefarshim have not dealt explicitly with Imos HaMashiach, but we have one source which of course is very well known, and because he deals with everything there is to address within the Torah, the mitzvahs of the Torah and all aspects of Yiddishkeit, we can turn to Rambam, and in the Mishnah Torah he has, as is well known, the Hilchos Malachim, and there he deals with the Halachos of Mashiach as well. If you turn the page over, here you have some lengthy excerpts. I'm sorry, in the English language. I don't mean to be patronizing, but it happened to be convenient for me to appear it in English for a previous occasion. And here at the very end of the Mishnah Torah, in Hilchos Malachim U'Milcha Motzeihem, you have in Perek Yud Beis the following statement of the Rambam. Let no one think that in the days of the Messiah any of the laws of nature will be set aside. So right away, the Rambam disagrees with Ramban, and he rejects the possibility that there will be a transformation of nature, but maybe a change, of course, in human nature. So he says, that's not going to happen, or any innovation be introduced into the creation. The world will follow its normal course. Olam kimin hago noheg. The words of Isaiah, and the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall dwell with the kid, are to be understood figuratively, meaning that Israel will live securely among the wicked of the heathens, who are likened to wolves and leopards, as it is written, the wolf of the deserts does spoil them, a leopard watches over their cities. So according to the Rambam, And again, we've seen that he has a support in Shmuel, Ein Ben Yemin Lebos Mashiach, and he has support in Rabbi Yehuda and Sifra, that this statement in the Yeshaya is meant figuratively, and the lion and the lamb is Klal Yisrael, the lion are the predatory Kumas Olam. He says they will accept the true religion and will neither plunder nor destroy, and together with Israel earn a comfortable living in a legitimate way, Alavai, as it is written, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. It means there'll be plenty of food, plenty of provisions to go around for Klal Yisrael, for Umos HaOlam. All similar expressions used in connection with the Messianic age are metaphorical. In the days of King Messiah, the full meaning of those metaphors and their allusions will become clear to all. So the Rambam is hinting that don't expect to understand everything that you read there about Yemus HaMashiach. We haven't yet experienced it. Once we do, in retrospect, of course, we'll be able to understand those allusions and those references and those metaphorical turns of phrase. And the Rambam goes on in a similar vein. It's interesting, just Derech Agav, if you look at towards the end of that same column, he says, some of our sages say that the coming of Eliyahu will precede the advent of Mashiach, but no one is in a position to know the details of this and similar things until they have come to pass. They are not explicitly stated by the prophets, nor have the rabbis any tradition with regard to these matters. They are guided solely by what the scriptural text seems to imply. Hence, there is a divergence of opinion on the subject. It's all speculative, says the Rambam, and even amongst the crowd, different opinions which are expressed, but there's no definitive, reliable tradition which we can say that this is definitely the way things will unfold. But be that as it may, neither the exact sequence of those events nor the details thereof constitute religious dogmas. No one should ever occupy himself with the legendary themes or spend much time on Midrashic statements bearing on this and like subjects. He should not deem them of prime importance, since they lead neither to the fear of God nor the love of Him. Very kind of sweeping language in the Rambam. No one should calculate the end, said the rabbis. Blessed be those who reckon out the end. Mechashvei Kitzin. One should wait for His coming and accept in principle this article of faith, as we have stated before. So he is a Rambam, is on record as saying very clearly, Ein ben Yemeinu Masa Mashiach al-Shivin Malchus Gavad. It's a political transformation. The Klal Yisrael, instead of being scattered and reviled and oppressed, will be gathered together, will be restored to their land, will be admired and will be recognized as the bearers of the divine truth throughout these many, many years of human history. Now I want to turn, in the minutes we have left, to a very, I think, a very interesting and very important question. Have we made any progress towards the Messianic era? When we consider the world as it is, can we say, and when we look back at history generally, can we say that yes, we can tell that we're getting closer to Messianic times? Or would we say things are worse now than they've ever been?
Getting better, but it's so much a big sign, right?
Could well be. Could very well be. But I'm not going to go down that the route that Johnny has warned me really against controversy. But yes, it could very well be. I want to take a different tack, look at a different aspect of this subject. You see, the Perek Yubeis is the last Perek in the Mishnah Torah, Perek Yubeis of Hilchos Malachim. Maybe it goes up to your Gimel. It's nearly the very, very end of the Mishnah Torah. The fascinating thing is that in Perek Yud Aleph of Hilchos Malachim, you have a fascinating passage which has been excised by the censors. You know that the Jewish books, and all books, were subject to church censorship for centuries, literally. And manuscripts were subject to that. That's why many Jewish manuscripts were seized and burned. And later on, when the printing press was invented and it was possible to reproduce text much more efficiently than writing them out by hand laboriously, which would take weeks or months, you know, per copy. So the church was very keen to ensure that no heresies would be circulated, and every book, Jewish books and other books as well, had to be subject to the papal censor. And they would get Shimadim Lo Aleinu or others who would read it and say, well, this is objectionable to the Christian church, this is insulting to the Christian faith, and they would censor them out. They would allow them to appear. And so it is that when you buy the Mishnah Torah nowadays, you won't find the passage which is on the right-hand column on this page. However, it has been recovered. It was printed in Rome once, and there are manuscripts as well which confirm that this is the original uncensored version. Take a look. But if he does not meet with full success, the Rambam here is talking about Mashiach, how you know if someone is Mashiach or is not Mashiach. If he does not meet with full success or is slain, it is obvious that he is not the Messiah promised in the Torah. He is to be regarded like all the other wholehearted and worthy kings of the house of David who died, and whom the Holy One, blessed be He, raised up to test the multitude. He's, I think, referring to Bar Kochba here. As it is written, and some of them that are wise shall stumble, to refine among them and to purify and to make white even to the end of time, for it is yet for the time appointed. And he's alluding here to Rabbi Akiva. This is in the uncensored part already, where he says that the Rabbi Akiva was the supporter of Bar Kochba. Bar Kuziba, he calls him, Chazal call him, and Rabbi Akiva was of the view that Bar Kochba appears to have the credentials to earn for him the status of Melech HaMashiach. Unfortunately, says the Rambam, events turned out differently, and Rabbi Akiva, to his regret, had to acknowledge that no, it didn't quite work out, and Bar Kochba is not Mashiach after all. But then the Rambam goes further, and he comments about certain historical figures in the course of history, even of Jesus of Nazareth, Yeshu HaNotzri, who imagined that he was the Messiah, but was put to death by the court Daniel had prophesied. As it is written, and the children of the violent among your people shall lift themselves up to establish the vision, but they shall stumble. Well, you can see how the church was not very fond of this kind of statement. That's why they censored it out. Well, has there ever been a greater stumbling than this? All the prophets affirmed that the Messiah would redeem Israel, save them, gather their dispersed, and confirm the commandments. But he caused Israel to be destroyed by the sword, their remnant to be dispersed and humiliated. He was instrumental in changing the Torah and causing the world to err and serve another besides God. Now, at this point, I just want to pause and give you a little bit of context by telling you a story, a true story. The Rambam here says how Yeshu HaNotzri also imagined himself and was considered by his followers, probably most of whom, perhaps all of whom were Jewish, by the way, that he was Mashiach. Says the Rambam, but of course he wasn't, because just look at the facts, look at the historical reality. You see, very far from Mashiach. But is it possible that Christianity and Islam, and he refers to Muhammad as well in a short while, have nevertheless played some role in the messianic process? Let me tell you a story that happened to me about 12 years ago. 14 years ago, it was in 1992, we were visiting in Spain. I say 1992 because they had the World's Fair, the Expo in Sevilla in that summer, and there were tourists from all over the globe, literally, in Spain at that time. And we were visiting in Gibraltar, actually, and we crossed over into Spain, and we were waiting for a bus. And there was a tall, good-looking black man who was standing there, was also waiting for the bus, and he said to me, he was talkative, and he said to me, are you from Israel? So I said, no, I'm actually from America, I live in England now. So I said, well, I thought you were from Israel, I saw you wearing a head covering, so I figured you must be from Israel. I said, well, that means I'm Jewish. I said, it's true, there are a lot of Jews in Israel, but not all of them wear the head covering. Anyway, we got on the bus, and I said, where are you from? He said, I'm from Fiji Islands. So he's asking me about Judaism. I'll ask him about the Fiji. So he said, I said, what are you in Fiji? And he said, well, we're Catholics, Roman Catholics. I said, have there always been Roman Catholics in Fiji Islands? Of course, I knew there hadn't been, of course. I mean, he told me that Fiji Islands in the South Pacific, about 150 islands, a whole group of... He told me it took him about 3 days of traveling to get... He's with his country's exhibition in the expo. He said it took him 3 days of traveling from his village. He went by a horse and buggy to the port, and from there he took a boat to another island. From there he took a plane to New Zealand, and it took him 3 days of traveling to get from Fiji Island to Sevilla with his country's exhibit. So we're talking about the ends of the earth. So I said, have there always been Roman Catholics in Fiji Islands? He said, oh no, they used to be barbarians and cannibals. I said, really? He said, yes. He said, until the missionaries came and they civilized them. I said, but what was it like before the missionaries? Oh, he said, it was so primitive, it was horrible. He said they would go, the tribes would fight and quarrel and go to battle with one another, and the loser would come home for dinner. You know, they were cannibals. So I said, when was that? He said, I said, was that hundreds of years ago? He said, no, in my grandfather's time. He said, we still had cannibals. He was a young man. He said, we still had cannibals in Fiji Islands. So I thought to myself, the Rambam doesn't need any corroboration, certainly not from Rashi Simon. But I thought to myself, is this not a remarkable affirmation of what the Rambam writes? I said, I got a lot of quarrels with the Roman Catholic Church, historically, theologically, and in a lot of ways. I got a lot of tainas on them. But it's a darn sight better than paganism and cannibalism. And if you take a look now at this next paragraph, that is beyond the human mind. To fathom the designs of the Creator, for our ways are not His ways, neither are our thoughts His thoughts. All these matters relating to Jesus of Nazareth and the Ishmaelite, that means Muhammad, who came after him, only served to clear the way for Melech HaMashiach, to prepare the whole world to worship God with one accord, as it is written, for then I will turn to the peoples of pure language, that they may all call upon the name of the Lord to serve Him with one consent. Thus the messianic hope, the Torah, and the commandments have become familiar topics of conversation among the inhabitants of the far isles and many peoples, even the Fiji Islands. Whether the Rambam even knew about the existence of the Fiji Islands, I question. But this is a fulfillment. There is no more distant isles than the Fiji Islands.
Say cannibalism. Cannibalism only killed a few people, but the Christians killed thousands or millions. So in that way, it's not better.
That's true, but it's a higher value system. It's a superior value system. As the Rambam said, it reflects the teachings of the Torah, distorted, maybe perverted, maybe abused, but nevertheless, many fundamental teachings of the Torah have found their way to the most distant isles through the convoluted, distorted, ironic channels of Christianity and Islam. They are discussing these matters in the commandments of the Torah. Some say those commandments were true, but have lost their validity, are no longer binding. Others declare it had an esoteric meaning, etc. He says, but when the true King Mashiach will appear and succeed, be exalted and lifted up, they will forthwith recant and realize that they have inherited naught but lies from their fathers, that their prophets and forebears led them astray. So we have a way of looking back at history and acknowledging the distance that we still need to traverse in our own lives, as a community, as a human race. But at the same time, we have moved forward, and over the years, through the convoluted and ironic channels of Christianity and Islam, the teachings of the Torah have penetrated to the most distant isles, and hopefully we will soon witness the fulfillment of Vahaya Hashem Lamelech al Kol Haaretz Ve'emo Yehi Hashem Echad U'Shmo Echad. And whether the view of the Ramban or the Rambam prevails, hopefully we'll have a chance to find out for ourselves very soon.
The Da Vinci Code also
called
the same idea. The Da Vinci Code.
Oh yeah.